Welcome to Witch Hunt, the podcast bringing you news about today's witch hunts. I'm Josh Hutchinson.
And I'm Sarah Jack. I descend from multiple women accused of witchcraft in colonial New England.
I also descend from several women who were accused before and during the Salem witch trials.
Just as these women did many years ago, women today continue to proclaim their innocence.
One person working to end these modern-day witch hunts is Neelish Singh, who works for the National Rural Livelihood Mission in India, focusing on gender and social inclusion. His work involves various aspects of rural development, social audit, and addressing gender issues with a specific focus on preventing witch hunting.
Neelish highlights that gender-based violence impacts women and girls of all ages, from before birth to old age, with a range of violence for different age groups.
Indeed, girls can be victims of infanticide, and older women, especially widows, are vulnerable to witchcraft allegations and the associated violence.
Beyond witch hunting, Neelish and his team are developing comprehensive strategies to address various forms of gender-based violence, including prevention, risk mitigation, and redressal mechanisms.
An art therapy initiative was used to help women express their experiences through painting. As they grew in confidence, they began to transition from using old newspapers to using fresh drawing papers and a wider range of colors, symbolizing their journey of healing and empowerment.
Organizing women into collectives and educating them about gender issues is crucial, and it's essential to create platforms within women's collectives where members can discuss private matters like domestic violence, challenging the stigma and fear associated with speaking out.
Neelish emphasized the importance of building networks of witch hunt survivors, enabling them to influence policy and media coverage. He highlighted the need for the state to recognize its responsibility in addressing and preventing such practices.
And he shares some touching stories with us today. We are pleased to welcome Neelish Singh, expert social inclusion and gender integrator with India's National Mission Management Unit. He has spent decades working in India's social development sector.
My name is Neelish, and I'm working for a government scheme and centrally sponsored scheme called National Rural Livelihood Mission. And I am in their gender and social inclusion vertical. This is a national level scheme, and it is being implemented in every states and union territories of India. And I passed my post-graduation from an institute called Xavier Institute of Social Services in 2000. I did my specialization in rural development. I initiated with tribal empowerment and slowly into the natural resource management and then to the social audit and to gender aspects. And it was like in 2016 that I got this opportunity to work on gender issues. So before that, I didn't have much experience of working on gender issues, and I was like fortunate enough to initiate my work on gender issues with an issue which was burning there called witch hunting. For me also, it was like first of time, you know, I was hearing such kind of, that's how I started working intensively for the prevention of witch hunting. And I had my team and we had some strategy to do that. And then government, you know, supported us because I was the part of that time with the state government. I was working under the same scheme. And then the national government, they also supported us, and lots of other NGOs also joined us, and we could do it in a scale. And then a special project was designed around it. Continue to work on this. And now we have designed to further, because different states has got different kind of gender issues. So we are now working on the entire gender-based violence for their aspects of prevention and for the risk mitigation and for redressal mechanism. And so everything we are trying to now work it, and we are still growing.
Does gender-based violence affect all ages of women?
Yes. You know, there is a saying here, from the womb to tomb. It affects from when you are yet to born, and it goes on until the tomb. We have got like range of violence for different kind of age group, which runs across it. So yeah, for every age group.
You mentioned that the gender violence is a little different in every state or it presents itself in its own way. That must be a great challenge to have so many different entry points to address the issue.
At the national level, we have got very different roles to play. The things comes from the bottom, from the community itself. So every community, they prioritize their issues as per their need and as per they are affected by it and all. Many of the places, the issues are like the state where I belong to, they have got witch hunting as one of the priority issue, and then human trafficking is there. Domestic violence is almost there in almost every state is reporting against domestic violence. Then the issues like child marriage are quite prevalent. I can see wherever the incidence of poverty is high, you will find the incidence also of child marriages and such things are also high. And then we have got issues like dowry that here actually in India, we have this practice for the marriage. The bride side, they have to give some money for getting married to the bridegroom. We call it the dowry system. It is like quite high, quite prevalent in several parts of the country, and it is very high. There's a cost for every bridegroom. So suppose if a girl is there and she wants to marry a doctor, what happens? There's two sides of it. One is that this girl has always, right from her birth, she has been brought up very differently. Here in India, we brought up our girl very different from the way we bring up our boys. While there, the boys would have different aspirations and we will all support him. Like he wants to become doctor, engineer, or whatever he wants to become. Every family member would try to support him. Father, mother, everybody would try to support this person. Girls' child are largely, they are brought up like for being a very good wife. So they are like nurtured for being wife of somebody. And she can have dream of her bridegroom. She cannot dream about her own career. Her career will be like a housewife only. But she can dream about her bridegroom. Okay, so I would want to marry a doctor. I would want to marry an engineer. She cannot dream of becoming a doctor, becoming an engineer, you know, like that. And higher aspirations are, the greater would be the price of the dowry that you have to pay. While in order to grow a boy child, the father would save the money and invest the money in his education. Here, father would save the money so that he can pay for the dowry. So he would try to invest least on the education of the girl. So girl will be nurtured and will be taught, will be trained as a good wife. So for doing the household chores and all these activities, while the boys will be encouraged to go to school and go to school and have good education. And so this incidence of sometime, it is though the parents and the child might have the dream of marrying a doctor, but their poverty, their economic status, that may not allow, you know, her and her parents to realize that dream. In the process, what happens that, and this is also based on the greed of the family, because this never ends, no? Suppose you say that, you know, 50 lakh is the amount that you need to pay for marrying this person. And then even if you have paid 50 lakh, it doesn't stop you that asking this money again to her father that, okay, now, you know, I know that you have paid 50 lakh, but I would need 10 more lakh because now I have to give education to the child. Now she is giving birth to a girl child. So we have to do something. So they keep on asking. And this often leads to exploitations and also violence and extortion and all those things. So sometimes, so it leads to dowry death also. So you'll find in lots of incidents and all these incidents like human trafficking or domestic violence or witch hunting or dowry or child marriage, all these things requires different kinds of strategies. Depends in which part of the country are you living and what kind of resources you have access to and what kind of society do you live in, what kind of culture do you have, what kind of accessibility do you have. So all depending upon all those things, you need to knit your strategy around it. One thing that we have in common under NRLM is that we form women-based groups. We call self-help groups here. So here, NRLM is like one of the program, National Rural Livelihood Mission. In short, I'm calling it NRLM. This program is largest network of women collectives. Now, in the entire country, we have got more than 10 crore of now women who became part of our self-help groups now. we try to keep this in our base that we need to build our strategy on these women collectives. So we promote women collectives to plan women collectives to take action against it. And we try to sensitize these women collectives against this. Because being, even though this is women collective, that doesn't mean that everybody will be very sensitive to the women issues. Sometimes because they are from the same society, it takes some time and it takes time to understand what kind of system is existing there. How are they driver of the patriarchy and all those things. And by understanding all those things, by assessing the kind of gender sensitivity that they have, we have to plan their sensitization, their awareness and their capacity building and all those things. And that's how strategy is built upon. So there are several strategy. While we might have human trafficking there in most of the states, but our strategy might be very different in different part of the state, depending upon the different characteristics and resources. Yeah.
In your messages with us before the interview, you talked about the importance of collective action by women's collectives. What kind of action do you mean by that?
Now, let me give you the example of incidents of witch hunting and witch branding. The foremost incident that I came across, there was a member of our own women collective. She was branded as a witch by different people. And eventually what happens, her own collective, her own self-help groups, the people who have come together to help each other, they also started calling her witch. And eventually, what happened, her husband's big brother, elder brother, and his wife, both of them, they once decided to kill that lady. And they came with axe in her hand and then they tried to attack her. And somehow she skipped from that house, but that didn't stop them to chase her and pull her down and all those things. But somehow she could save her life, but she couldn't save her house and her grains and all those things. Everything was put on fire. I raised this question to the collective that while she was being branded, while she was being chased down by somebody, while somebody attempted to kill her, why is that she was a member of your own group? Why did any of you came forward to help her? So they also said that because she's a witch, so killing a witch it's like saving everybody else. Otherwise, she would have killed all of us. So it's like a good thing. So that made us think again that unless until everyone is sensitized towards it, there's nothing we can do again, because police also couldn't take much action because nobody was ready to give any witness. No evidence was there. And then villagers shared several incidents in which several of the lady who have been killed in the name of witch, no one had came forward to say against that crime or that. Well, and nobody even knew that this is a crime. Everyone think that this is a good thing and they have done it for the collective goodness of everybody else. What was important is that at the time, at the peak of the SAR, nobody was there in support of her. Even if some people wanted to support her, they were also would have been killed eventually, because it is very hard to go against the entire crowd. You won't have that much of voice and that much of courage. Also, they would kill that woman in front of everyone. And I don't believe that everyone would believe that this lady is a witch. You know, there would be at least some supporter. Yeah. Somebody would believe her friend or maybe her daughter or her son, even her husband or maybe her parents. Somebody would at least believe that this is not, she has not killed that child. That child died because of fever and she was not around and she couldn't have caused any fever to that child. Why are you saying that you have casted bad eyes? I don't think that she could have casted any bad eyes on that child and all those things. You cannot intervene at the time when people have started taking out their weapon and want to kill that person. At that time, it's very difficult to intervene. But you can start intervening right from the beginning. You can start recognizing who are the person who believe in rationality. Who are the person who believe that this violence is against only women. It is not against any man also. Because all the cases that we have, I think more than 95% were women only. And all those 5% male people who have been killed in the name of witch, they were only supporter to that lady. So this is a weapon which man folks are using against their women, to take control of the women and all. We had to build up this, and we wanted that this discussion should start happening in our group, because our self-help groups was not limited only for helping each other during the economic crisis. These are also the things where they can discuss all those things in their groups. When we were going through their minute books and in the meeting minutes books, we realized that they never discuss any kind of violence within their self-help groups. Like, nobody would discuss about any domestic violence, even though they wanted to discuss these things, but never believed on any of their members. They thought that if we will tell them about that my husband has beaten me yesterday night, that this incident will reach out to her husband and again, and then she will get more bashing after that when she go back home. And while everybody in that group was suffering from domestic violence at some point of time or other, but nobody was ready to help each other. Nobody had any belief in each other's distance. What we wanted to do is, we wanted to make this platform as a platform which has got a greater credibility, in which members can discuss about these things as well. This is a very private thing to talk about, but we wanted them to be that close, where they can discuss about the kind of violence that is going through, or the kind of stigma, the kind of embarrassing moment that they are living every day. Somebody might be sleeping very hungry, but she needs to tell that. In India, I'm not sure about the other part of the country, but in India, what happens that if a lady gets beaten up by the husband, she won't tell to anyone. She thinks that it is the honor of the family. So she has to take care of the honor of the family. So she will, if the husband beats her in open, she will rush to the home and she will close all the door, all the window. And then she will request her husband to keep his voice down. And then you can beat me, but keep your voice down. Nobody should listen to this. And then next day, she will try to remove all the strains from her face and everything. And then she'll go back to the work like that. I don't know why this burden is there on her. She's the victim. She's the survivor. I mean, we wanted them to believe that she is not the only savior of the honor. I mean, she, and this, some responsibility of males are also there in it. And it's okay if she shares her story, and it's okay that everyone tries collectively to stop each other's husband from doing it and seeking some legal services if it requires so. There are, like, police are there, legal services are there. All these are meant for women also. And it's okay if they go and seek out this help. These poor, the only strength that they have, they don't have money. They don't have much resources with them. But the thing that they have is their collectiveness, their numbers. They're such a high number. And we are organizing them. Making them organize is, I think, we are hoping that this will give strength to them against such a horrendous crime.
So I'm hearing you say that just bringing them together is just the start. They also have to be educated and encouraged to make positive responses together as a collective.
We learn from different parts of the country, because at the national level, we don't have any other geography to work on. But different states, they work on, they have their own geography. So we learn from different states. So we have got a state called Kerala here. And they are like much mature state, in the sense they have got very old women collectives. So there now, it is more than 20 years or 30 years, I'm not sure, but it is that long, that the women have been organized and they are now working on the gender issues. One of the strategy that they have is they map the crimes in the villages. So every village, women collectively, along with the district administration, along with the government officials, they map crime, what kind of crime happens in which corner of the village. This is where domestic violence happened. This is where, so likewise, they map the crime. And then they also map, they also do safety audit with different kinds of women folks and of different age group. What happens is that maybe a pregnant woman and a lactating mother, or an elderly woman and a person with disability, all those women, they will walk in the night and also in the day in different parts of that village, and will tell that what kind of incidents happens here and who among all of us are feel safe here or feel unsafe here and what kind of incidents does happen. And they can say that this road is not safe for pregnant women to walk on, or this road is not safe for, or this building is not safe for a person with disability to go into or take any services, or here people are not friendly about it. So likewise, they will map all the problem and then they will also come out with a solution. And I think there is a CCTV if you can put here, then it will serve some problem. If you can close down that liquor shop, I think that will also close down some issue. If you can just put some lights here, because there's so much of dark, and if you can put some lights. So like this, they will also propose the solution. And that prevents so much of violence to happen. This comes into the village plan, village annual action plan of that village, which you can follow up, which district admission can follow up with on a regular basis, that how this was the plan and this was what approved and how much of it has been really implemented and where is the gap.
You'd mentioned you also wanted to talk about the healing and empowerment of witch hunt survivors.
During the initial period, what happened is that we had identified, we used to develop a theater team of rural women. We used to train them on theaters. So there was a person who was a professional theater person. So we hired his services for passing these skills on or training the women on theater. And then we also took the services of some of the organizations who were working on the legal issues for documenting the cases and all. So we made a group of 10 people in each team. So there were several teams. So every team had 10 women who were trained on theater and who were trained also on documenting the cases. And we would put that team in a village for 2 days or so. So they used to stay there also in the night. So 2 days and two nights they need to stay there. And they would play this theater there. And then eventually what would happen is that somebody in the village would relate her story with the story which they were showing in the theater. And because they were staying in the same village, so the woman who were already being branded as witch, she would relate her story with the story which they were showing in the theater. And they would, she can also access them because they were staying in the same village. So that's how they would identify the cases. They will identify the women who have been branded as witch. So because the experience has taught us that first they will brand somebody as witch, and after that only, maybe after some period of, after some years, after some months, or maybe after some decades, they will kill them. So they cannot kill anybody before they brand her as witch. So first they need to brand her witch, then they need to convince everybody that she's witch, and then only this killing will happen or public lynching will happen. So our strategy was to identify such women who have been branded as witch, and then to call up a public hearing in which we used to call judiciary, police, and different government officials and panchayat people, all those public figures we used to call them, because it was ultimately, it was their responsibility for the security and safety of every citizen of India. So we'll call each of them and then we'll hand over this list to them. That we are not making this list public, but we are handing over to you publicly, handing over this list to you personally, so that you take care of the safety and security of this person. This person has been branded as witch, and we don't want this person to get killed also. So if that person is getting killed, then you should be held accountable for that. So that's how they ensure the protection of that lady. So we used to identify such this theater group. They used to go village after village. They used to cover every village and they used to identify. In the first round, we identified 65 of them. When we covered in one go, we covered 40 villages of one block before we called for public hearing. So 65 lady were identified as witch, who have been branded as witch. And they were living a very pathetic life in their own village. And this was the first time we were interacting with such women. And we called all these women to a place here in a city. And it was a luxurious hotel. And we kept this workshop for 3 days there. And we had called our several partners who were champion in working on the gender-based violence. And we also had several trainers along with us. And when we were there in that hotel, anything that we would ask them, we will ask, what is your name? They would take so much of time to speak out their name. And their fears were not stopping and they were just crying. And I think by the lunch, they said that this is the first time that after such a long period of somebody was saying 10 years or 20 years that somebody was interacting with them and that they are getting such a good food. And so many people are giving respect to them. They're talking to her, all those things. And this was, we got moved by their gestures, by their tears and everything. That's where we got to know that just saving their life is not enough. They also need to live their life and they need to live their life very normally. You know, we need to normalize all those things and they need to come out from that fear. And they, everybody, you know, the kind of incidents that the ladies were sharing, one of the lady, she said that her house is situated at the end of the village, somewhere in the corner of the village. It was made of twigs and straw and all those things, bushes and all those things. It was like just one kick and the entire house will collapse. That kind of hut. It was a hut. And she was saying that every day, every night, and in every night, somebody would come and will pass urine on the wall of the house. Some of the urine will also enter the house from there because it is anyway made of some thatches and some twigs and all those things. So the winds can pass on from that. So urine will also pass from that while. And it doesn't matter where she's sleeping or cooking or whatever she might be doing, but this person will pass urine and will say, look, my child is sick and I know that you have casted bad eye, your bad eyes. By morning, if my child is not okay, then I am going to kill you. And this will happen to her almost every night. Somebody in the entire village would fall in. Somebody will lost something or maybe somebody will suffer for some pain and she would become the cause for that. Everybody would believe that she is the cause for that. And living a life like that for such a long period was like, I cannot even imagine such a horrendous life to be. What we thought is, you need to bring her out from the kind of suffering that she's undergoing and the kind of state of mind that she's living in. And we are talking about so many people here. They might be very elderly or they might be very at the end of their life, but still they deserve a good life to lead or whatever life is left for them. So that time, we thought that some counseling would be okay for them. So we did organize for some counseling. But after that, we thought that there has to be some way in which we can continuously engage with them. So one thing which occurred to all of us was, let us give them training on theater and make them as part of our theater group. And they can go to different villages and aware people against witch hunting. And because they can share their own story and that will be real story. And they can influence people like them. They can understand their pain very well. And we have seen that just giving them, like the trainer who used to give training on theater, when he saw entire participants, all of them were like above the age of 70s. That was a challenge for him. He has never taught such elderly people on theater. But that was just like six-day residential training. But that slowly he understood the power that they had. And this 6 days when they were staying together and they were discussing about all those things, it gave them so much of space for sharing their story and learning from them and opening up and all those things. And when they became the part of the theater group, when they learn from different people and when they able to saw that there are so many, they also can make friends. There are people who also support them. There are people who enjoy talking to them or being with them, who can share their food with them, or they can eat from the same plate in which she's eating, and they can sleep in the same room in which she is sleeping. So it was like, it was a moment for them. It was like giving their life back. And theater had this power to heal all those things and to give them the voice. We saw this power in theater. That's where people said that theater and music, everybody, everything, you know, all these things, power of healing also. They can heal the pain which is there inside you. They can give you voice. There's a friend called Alina and she is an art therapist. So She told me that I practice art therapy. We never heard such thing called art therapy. We wanted to know what is this art therapy. So she said, art also has fine arts. This also has the power of healing. And from the art, the kind of art that you make, I can make out the kind of suffering that you are undergoing through and the kind of pain that you are feeling and all those things. And I would try to heal all those things from the art only. So what happened? She was, at that time, she was also suffering from cancer. And while she was undergoing through this chemotherapy, and she couldn't have come to our place from Jharkhand, but she was living in Bangalore. So we had organized an online thing for her. We had organized a big screen, mic and speakers. And then she said, at one time, I can maybe start with 8 or 9 people. So that was okay for us because we also had the challenge of a bigger room anyway. So we had all those, whatever she said, if she wanted some brush and paints and newspapers and some drawing papers and all those things. So we had organized for her and she used to speak in English, whereas our people, they used to understand Hindi. So we had one interpreter also with us. And so we would call all those 8 survivors in front of the big screen. And then she said, you can keep all the paints in front of them, all every color in front of them. And she would just ask them, okay, paint it, whatever you want and choose whatever color that you want, use whatever brush that you want. And this is a newspaper is there in front of you. You have blank papers also. You have drawing papers also. Paint whatever. To our surprise, almost every one of them chose dark color. And while they had the choice of several colors to select from, everyone chose only 1 or 2 color. We were not expert in that, but Alina, she said, this is telling the kind of that pain that they are undergoing through. This is the dark side that they have. And all of them have selected only newspaper, used paper to dry on. So that also tells about their confidence. They didn't have the confidence to paint any blank papers or any drawing paper or waste. And so they would not take such chance. So slowly she would interact with them. She would tell her about her own story and then try to listen to them and would try to make them open up about all those things. And slowly all of them, they shifted from newspaper to actual drawing paper. And then they started using more colors. And then eventually she asked them to paint a big wall. And it was collectively they had to paint a wall. And she said, the larger is the picture, the louder the voice is about, because they are communicating through their painting. That's what they are doing. It was our collective's office, the women collective's office. They offered her their wall, office wall to them, that you can paint your picture here. So it was like collective, it was showing a collective support towards such women. And then eventually the police station of that block, they offered their entire wall, the boundary wall of the entire police station to them, that you can paint your picture here and this wall is for you. So it was like entering into the police station and painting their walls and all those things, which were never, and they had never been to police station before that. I think that that was like working for them. That also encouraged other part of the districts, also other part of the state also to came for, who came forward, who wanted, you know, this thing. So Alina, you know, started giving us 2 days in a week for 2 other districts. So that's how we scaled it up. And all those lady who got healed, who Alina said that they are now healed, then we had in a residential mode. So we had this 3-4 days workshop, drawing workshop, trained them on special kind of painting called Sohrai painting and Gohbar painting. There were 2 kinds of regional painting, which was of Jharkhand. So they would start training on them. So they were trained on these 2 kinds of painting. And then we got this chance to take this painting to the exhibition. And there they selected this painting. And when we had called a state level workshop to share our story, to share the story of our strategies with the rest of the, you know, world. So there we had this chance to give their painting as gift to the honorable guest of that workshop. And they feel quite proud and accepting that as good.
I'm really hearing today how pulling people together and then finding a way to give somebody their humanity and then this collective, this coming alongside and then giving humanity back is like a start.
In one of the village, I think it was around 60-year-old lady. She was called as witch by other women of that village and also male people of that village. And all of them, they stripped this woman naked in front of the village. And then they applied some black color on her face and made her parade around the village and all those things. It was in the full daylight, and her son was such helpless. He wanted to help his mother, but couldn't do that. And his friend stopped him from doing such thing. And we had this collective in every village. And there is a federation called Cluster Level Federation, which is like a federation of 20 or 25 villages. Like after that, federates into a Cluster Level Federation. So this Cluster Level Federation had 21 villages under that federation. And in one of the villages, this thing happened. This collective of 21 village, they took the decision to felicitate that lady and to show their support towards that lady. And they took out rally from each of their village, and they brought the clothes and money and some food grains and some flour and everything. And then they felicitated that lady in front of every villager, and they showered her with the food or in the clothes. They said that since your clothes was stripped by these people, so every village is offering you these clothes now to you. And this is to honor you and to support you and to give this message to all the villages here that nothing will ever happen to you and nothing will ever happen to any of the person here. And we all collectives are here like to support everyone. From now on, if anyone tries to call anyone as witch, then we will take action against that person. We'll take that person behind the bar with the help of police and everything. And this was almost for the first time that people were showing support to anybody called witch. Before that, they had never seen anyone supporting witch such openly in such an open forum. And here it was like people coming from every corner of the villages and they're rallying against that incident. And then it was reported in media, it was reported in TV and newspapers. And so everybody was talking about such support. So that gave strength to them. And they wanted their chief minister, the head of the state, to give this statement that he won't tolerate this malpractice of witch branding and witch hunting. And he vows to make the state free from witch branding and witch hunting. They wanted the chief minister to give out this statement. So that incident of one particular village sparked the other collective of living in different parts of that state for carrying out a signature campaign against. This signature was taking the signature of every officials also. And then they shared, I think more than 50,000 signature was shared with the chief minister asking him to give this statement. And then he gave this statement and also asked the department to work against witch hunting and witch branding practices and make this state free from this. Share with me the strategy that you have for this. So it was very encouraging for our women. One more thing which I would like to share is that while all these things, working with government, it's important because what happens while we are working with NGOs, we can work in some pockets. We can work in smaller geography. But it is important that it's a responsibility of the state, and the state must realize it is their work, finally, to make this country free from such a horrendous practice. So, giving importance to such a thing is, I think we have to create this agency of such survivors. We need to build this network of all those survivors of witch hunting and make their agency so that they can talk, sit with the government and make the policy for themselves and talk with the media, sit in the media and tell the media that this is a very important issue and they must raise about this issue. While it's okay that you cover so many other things, but this is also an important issue. So please do cover that. So I think that's important for us to build an agency of such survivors. So while we have identified so many survivors, I think still a long way to go to form their agency.
And now, for Minute with Mary.
On behalf of End Witch Month, I am pleased to tell our listeners that I will be working with Neelish Singh and his team as we help the survivors of Witch Month to tell their stories through music, art, and theater. As I hold a degree in music education with a background in piano and voice studies, I will work within the team to help the survivors find their voices through song. I am honored. I may be a small part of helping them find their voice, but the survivors and the more experienced team members will teach me so much more beyond my current comprehension. I also have the full support of our board members, Sarah Jack, Joshua Hutchinson, Beth Caruso, and Jen Stevenson, who will do whatever they can to help in this endeavor. After all, whenever one of us reaches out to make a difference, we do so not only as individuals, but as a board of strong advocates who will help each other to actively make a difference.
Thank you, Mary.
Sarah has End Witch Hunts news.
End Witch Hunts, a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Weekly news update. Trial by ordeal is an ancient practice where the guilt or innocence of an accused person is determined through a physically or mentally challenging test. It has been a method of justice throughout history, reflecting deeply rooted beliefs in divine intervention and the supernatural. Trials by ordeal, which depend on supernatural beliefs and physical tests to ascertain guilt or innocence, lack the procedural fairness and evidentiary standards we expect in modern legal systems. Despite this, even the more formal witch trials of history were not immune to these practices, incorporating superstitious beliefs and physical tests to determine guilt. This enduring fear of witchcraft, along with the intention to prove malicious acts, highlights a continuous thread in human history. When such practices emerge in today's society, they echo historical precedents, revealing an ongoing struggle to balance myth with the principles of justice. Guinea-Bissau is a country of Western Africa situated on the Atlantic coast. It is about 44.1% urban and 55.9% rural. As of 2022, male life expectancy was averaging 61.5 years, and female life expectancy was 66 years. In 2022, their female population amounted to approximately 1.07 million, while the male population amounted to approximately 1.04 million. The advocacy for alleged witches, spearheaded by Leo Igwe, is sounding the alarm on an urgent human rights issue in this African country. There was an incident this month, February 2024, in the Kool-Aid region of Kashu. Here, 8 women were tragically killed and 20 other women hospitalized after being forced to consume a poisonous potion by a traditional priest to determine if they were guilty of witchcraft. These women were all over the age of 50. This incident is not isolated, but indicative of a wider systemic problem that transcends time and local cultural practices and points to a global responsibility. The belief in witchcraft crimes and the barbaric practice of trial by ordeal reflect an ongoing societal failure to protect the vulnerable and uphold justice. Witch hunts, often targeting women, expose the gendered nature of this violence, revealing deep-seated misogyny and societal complicity in these acts. The call to action by the Advocacy for Alleged Witches is not only a plea for the local government to intervene, but a wake-up call to the world. We are the world. Legal and administrative measures against those implicated in such abuses are necessary, but so is a broader societal shift to address the impunity that allows this violence to continue. The introduction of emergency helplines and targeted actions against perpetrators are steps in the right direction. However, these actions must be a part of a larger concerted effort to stop superstitious accusations with education, protect the rights of women and vulnerable populations, and fundamentally change how societies, how the world, views and addresses harmful acts due to accusations of witchcraft. This incident is a stark reminder that the fight against gender-based violence and the persecution of alleged witches is not solely the responsibility of Guinea-Bissau or any single nation. It is a global challenge that demands a unified response from all corners of the world. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for your financial gifts. Visit witchhuntshow.com to donate any amount you're comfortable with. Your generosity is the backbone of the podcast content you value. Let's commit to making a difference together.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to Witch Hunt.
Keep the conversation going in your sphere until you join us next week.
Have a great today and a beautiful tomorrow.